Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Chaim Salomon, Levi Strauss, Irving Berlin, Louis Brandeis, Jonas Salk, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. These are just Jewish Americans whose history spanned 250 years. Yet they encapsulate the enormous contribution that Jews have made to the building of America itself, its economy, its culture, its laws, its science, and its conscience. And as America celebrates its 250 years, I'm delighted to have as my guest now Professor Adam Mendelsohn, Director of the Kaplan Center for Jewish Studies at the University of Cape Town, to talk about the relationship between Jews and America. And just to let you know that Professor Mendelsohn is also the author of The Rag Race, How Jews Sowed Their Way to Success in America and the British Empire, which won the National Jewish Book Award, as well as the book Jewish Soldiers in the Civil War. He was also the chief historian of the first Jewish-American exhibition at the New York Historical Society. I'm absolutely delighted to have you, Prof. Mendelsohn. Welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Lovely to be able to speak about American Jewish history.
So let's start. American Jews actually were around the area even before America was officially established. So we have a long history there.
That's right. So the first arrivals are in 1654. This is when the Dutch control what today is New York, then is New Amsterdam, New Netherlands, and the first arrivals are a group of refugees coming from Recife in what today is Brazil, which has newly been recaptured by the Portuguese, and the Portuguese won't allow Jews to live in under their rule. So this group of refugees washes up in New Amsterdam, and in fact the governor Peter Stuyvesant tries to force them out, and he's overruled ultimately by the overseers of the Dutch West India Company, and so from 1654 we have a Jewish presence in what today is the America.
And what's interesting about that story is that probably the only reason that the Dutch West Company allowed them is because there were Jews who were part of that company at the time.
That's right. They are shareholders in Amsterdam, and there is and Peter Stuyvesant makes it clear that he has no interest in having Jews, sees Jews and other religious outsiders as being a problem. And you know, he's quite clear that he wants them to move on elsewhere. And the shareholders effectively overrule his authority. So it's really, you know, one of these fascinating moments where shareholder activism matters.
it's hard to know almost where to begin on a topic like this. When we, you know, I just mentioned six names just to try and capture the span of history that Jews have contributed to America. But I know that you are particularly interested in, can we call it the shmata industry, Jews' contribution to that, and just your insights.
So as you correctly point out, there's a presence of Jews dating well back into the mid-17th century, but it remains a small Jewish population into the 19th century. So at the time of the revolution, we're talking about just a few thousand Jews in the whole of North America. But it really begins to take off in the mid-19th century with the arrival of Jews from Central Europe, what will become Germany and certainly parts of Poland and elsewhere. But then the mass arrivals are later in the 19th century, that the same wave of immigrants who wash up in South Africa in the 1880s and afterwards, a far larger number will make their way to the United States. So it's a community which grows from relatively small origins and it expands then quite quickly in the mid-19th century with Central European Jews, and then this tidal wave of Jews coming from Eastern Europe. And certainly even that there's the early presence leaves a mark. It's very important for American history that Jews are there, because they are outsiders in a country which you know, but for the presence particularly of Jews, there would be much easier for it to be a Christian country, and one where, you know, the Constitution would make no bones potentially about this being a country which is, for Christians, by Christians. And instead, the presence of these outsiders means that really from the start, America has to grapple with religious difference and what place will there be for Jews in American society? And that continues well past certainly the we see that during the revolution, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution make allowance for these religious outsiders that unlike Britain, which America separates itself from, there is no established religion. There's instead religious freedom. So, fundamental in a principle. And so that's one area where Jews make this enormous contribution just by being there and actually pushing for their rights as well. And the other, in many areas, they make contributions culturally, politically, and otherwise. But another area is economic, that certainly, and we see this particularly from the mid-19th century onwards, that the successes of the Central European Jews, these sort of German Jews, who are forerunners of, they're the creators of the modernization of the Schmatter business, of the clothing industry, of investment banks and otherwise, but they lay a foundation which then Eastern European Jews build on in a very, very dramatic way. And the numbers then change dramatically. We begin to talk about millions of Jews in America by the beginning of the 20th century.
So you described the influx and their ability to build on what was already there. How similar is that to what happened in South Africa?
It's a good question. So there are interesting parallels that certainly in South Africa prior to the gold rush, there are again Anglo-German Jews, the Jews from England, from Holland, from Germany, from elsewhere in South Africa. Again, small, relatively small numbers, and again that population is then overwhelmed by these newcomers who arrive. In our case, newcomers from Litvaks are coming from what today is Lithuania and Latvia. So that pattern there are similarities, but because I think that differs in scale in other ways. That when we talk about the first Jewish presence, proper Jewish presence in South Africa is delayed. It's really Jews are only able to live in South Africa, what will become South Africa, then in the Cape Colony from 1806. So Jews in a way are later arrivals here, but also those initial numbers are sufficiently small that I think there's less of a legacy once Eastern European Jews arrive. And they are again well outnumbered by the newcomers. But again, there are similar patterns in other ways that there are a number of very, very successful Anglo-German Jews who do leave some broader legacy. Again, interesting parallels between these two societies.
I also want to look at the parallels between Jews who fought in the civil rights movement and Jews who fought in the anti-apartheid movement. But I wonder if we should, before we go into that, because that's a bit more heavy, maybe, look at like the story of just randomly throwing out the Groucho Marxes, how they came to America, how they struggled at every single level, how they eventually adapted and possibly even changed humor.
Absolutely. So this is, it is a good example because what it points to is both an openness of American society to some degree to immigrants and to Jewish immigrants. Again, this is not, it's no paradise for immigrants by any means, in the sense that they do encounter a discrimination. There is a, like we're seeing in America at the moment, there is nativism, there is a rejection of outsiders, that there's a real struggle in American society about over whether Jews and Italians and Irish who arrive in very significant numbers at roughly the same time, whether they can ever properly be American citizens. So it's not, it's no paradise by any means. This genuine struggle over whether America will ultimately accept them. And likewise, the same is true in terms of their economic trajectory of Jews too, that the sweatshop economy, which many Jews, Eastern European Jews, will get their start in, is extremely difficult, extremely unpleasant. There are many, many people who will struggle and fail. But crucially, and this is what I write about in my book about the rag race, but What happens with Jews is that Jews move into the garment industry, into sweatshops of the Lower East Side, New York, and elsewhere, but they get out of it very quickly as well. They use it as a springboard into a variety of related areas. So they realize how that this is a dead end for many of them, career, and a miserable career. Much better to move on to other things. So we see Jews moving into a whole variety of sort of related areas. In some cases it's supplying the garment industry. In some cases it's sort of providing entertainment to garment workers, et cetera, et cetera. And they arrive at a moment where the American economy is expanding very, very quickly, and they get in at the ground floor of a variety of industries, including the Hollywood and entertainment industry more broadly, cosmetics, furniture, et cetera, et cetera. So it's partly an interesting story about timing. And what's important, just a final point around about this, what's important to understand is that Jews, as I said, get their start in a substantial way in the garment industry. So do, for example, Italians and Irish, well, Italians, less so Irish. And the difference is that Jews get out of the garment industry at the right time. Italians who enter it slightly later than them get stuck. So we don't see that same process of rapid upward mobility amongst Italians that we do amongst Jews, partly because of timing, and partly because Jews, there's an impetus to instead do entrepreneurial things. And being an entrepreneur at that point, it means, as I described to you, entering all of these new industries which are taking off, one of which is entertainment, and seizing the opportunities that new technologies of entertainment, people involved in vaudeville will move on to radio, television, movies, etc., doing precisely this.
It's interesting that you say, in terms of both timing and entrepreneurship, is there a sense that Jews helped each other at this point? That, I mean, I just think back here in South Africa when Jews came, okay, they had somebody they knew in a farm in the Free State, and they sent out for their family, and pretty soon Jewish organizations like the Chevra Kadisha were established. Did they have that same sense of community there in America? And or do you think by virtue of the fact that there's so many, it's more diluted?
It really is a great question, because the what helps in the South African context is that it's a relatively homogeneous, I mean, at least amongst Eastern European Jews who arrive here, that there's more diversity than we perhaps appreciate, but there's a they're coming from generally the same area. The reality for Jews who move to New York is that it's not just a case of the numbers being much bigger. We're talking about hundreds of thousands and then millions, as opposed to tens of thousands in the case of South Africa. But also, what is to some extent missing is that homogeneity, that this is a that the people are coming from very diverse backgrounds. We don't think about it as much now, but Jews are coming from, in large, very significant numbers, are coming from Romania. They're coming from the Pale of Settlement. They are coming from from Poland and elsewhere. So it's in a way more of a melting pot and within New York, even within the Jewish population, than is true in South Africa. But yes, there is a high degree of self-help as well. And it comes both in terms of what we might call sub-communities. So Litvaks helping Litvaks, and Hungarian Jews helping Hungarian Jews, Romanian Jews helping them. We certainly see that. Lots of what are called Landsmannschaften, sort of hometown associations and friendly associations, all sorts of groupings of this kind, which will emerge. But also that the Jewish population, which is in America there already, so Jews who are from the German states, what becomes Germany, 1871. Likewise, there is a desire on their part to uplift these newcomers, often for very self-interested reasons. They are somewhat embarrassed by them otherwise, but there are a whole variety of initiatives to try and uplift this population. But the scale in America is absolutely vast. That New York City will again, within a matter of decades in the 20th century, become the single largest Jewish city in the world, and will overtake Warsaw as the largest Jewish city in the world. So again, this is everything as today. When we think about America, we often think about excess. This is, in Jewish terms, also this is an unprecedented challenge in terms of scale.
And I can imagine, I mean, okay, we only have 5 minutes left, which is very sad to think about. But let's talk a little bit about Jews in the struggle and Jews in the civil rights movement, and just like where it leaves Jews today in both countries. I mean, I know that's a big ask for 5 minutes, but let's go.
Sure. It's something close to my heart. This is how I became interested in the field of American Jewish histories in the first place, was trying to draw comparisons between the South African Jewish experience with apartheid and the American experience with segregation and civil rights then in America. And there are, again, interesting parallels and interesting differences of a variety of kinds, and too, that as in South Africa, where Jews were disproportionately represented in the struggle against apartheid, we see something similar in America as well, that the founders of key organizations like the NAACP and the Urban League and otherwise, that Jews are at the forefront of organizations pushing for the rights of Black Americans. We certainly see that. We likewise see lawyers in America likewise similarly playing a key role in pushing for the expansion of rights and pushing against segregation, against injustice in America. Likewise, during the civil rights movement itself, there's this disproportionate presence of Jews amongst freedom riders and others involved in the very dangerous work in the South of pushing for rights for African Americans. So there's a very interesting set of parallels. What perhaps one of the interesting differences is in that in America, in a very significant way, it's a whole variety of very mainstream Jewish organizations, the Anti-Defamation League, the B'nai B'rith, the American Jewish Committee, certainly American Jewish Congress. So these are what are called defense organizations. We're called defense organizations in America. They see it as something as beneficial to the Jewish population as a whole to very actively push for expanding rights to African Americans. So we see them in 1954 during the Brown decision, that again, famous, very important Supreme Court decision, which desegregates education, begins the process of desegregating education. We see again the behind the scenes that the American Jewish Committee is playing a very significant role, for example. And that reflects a different reality for Jews in America, which is Jews in South Africa, there's a hostile government. There is a government which is where it's very difficult for Jews and sometimes dangerous for Jews to stick their necks out. Whereas in America, certainly that's the case in part in parts of the South. But it's not true in New York and elsewhere that there, again, the American government's response to the civil rights movement is complicated, but it's a different reality for major Jewish organizations in New York and Washington and elsewhere. That's one interesting difference. And the other interesting difference it relates to actually the role of communism as well, that in South Africa, we see a number of the activists being driven by and draw on their communist affiliations, that this is how they become involved in the struggle through the South African Communist Party. In America, what's fascinating is that particularly after the Second World War, communism becomes a dangerous thing in broader American society. And the Jewish community disassociates itself, mainstream community disassociates itself from communism and communist groups and otherwise. So again, that provides much less of an impetus in the American environment than it does in the South African environment in terms of how Jews engage with civil rights.
Absolutely fascinating. Prof, can we pick up this conversation again? And maybe just maybe if you're up to even do a series, and we can just take the different sectors and explore them further, because it's fascinating to see how we differ and similar we are to South Africa.
With great pleasure. This is strangely enough is my bread and butter. This is my training. My PhD training was at Brandeis University with the foremost historian of American Jewish history, and I'm always delighted. I get very few chances to talk about American Jewish history. Delighted to do so.
Thank you so much. So that is not the end of that. That is just the beginning of the conversation. Thank you very much to Professor Adam Mendelsohn, and we were looking at Jewish contribution to America, considering that they are celebrating 250 years. So that's a conversation we will continue again. Thank you so much for joining me.